When you're going through a breakup, it feels like your whole world is unraveling. And the hardest part isn't just the loss of the relationship, of course. It's the loss of the story you thought you were living, the story you thought you were going to create. But I want you to know this. Heartbreak doesn't have to be the end. It can actually be the beginning. It is the beginning if you let it be. And that's why I created the Breakup Recovery audio series. It's a 5-day journey to help you move through heartbreak with compassion, clarity, and strength. For just $30, you'll get guided audio teachings, powerful stories, daily activities, and a full reflection workbook to work through alongside me. This isn't about bypassing your pain. That's BS. It's about giving you the tools to process it, learn from it, and emerge more grounded in who you truly are. And finally, putting an end to the patterns in relationship that you keep finding yourself in. So if you're ready to start healing, head to createthelove.com/breakupaudio and begin today for just $30. Because heartbreak doesn't define you, your recovery does. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. For those of you who do not know me, I am obsessed with understanding human behavior. And I really believe that so much of our understanding comes from the frictions that we have in the relationships that we have with other people, but also things like substances and devices, of course, our technology. I think that's become a really magnifying place to look at the work we need to do. And I'm really mostly obsessed with understanding what holds humans back from becoming the best possible version of themselves. And why do we tend to wait to become better when sort of the end of our life has been presented to us, or we've experienced some sort of rock bottom, we've experienced some sort of confrontation with the finite nature of life? It's January 2026, and so it feels crazy that it's 2026. I shared an Instagram reel last week that said, it's 6 days until 2026. That means it's been 30 years since 1996. And I thought, oh my gosh, what was I doing in 1996? For a lot of you, you might never not even been born yet or even been an idea in someone's mind, heart, and soul and nether regions. But I really started to think, man, 1996, I was graduating from high school. Man, to think I'm in my 48th year of life, the things that I've accomplished, the things I have yet to want to accomplish. You know, when I was a pharmaceutical rep, I worked in the end of my career in oncology and hematology, and I sat in this room with a patient when the physician was working with them, and I remember the physician told this patient that they were going to die from kidney cancer, and the patient and his wife were there, and it was the first time they had been told this, and I remember just like how much of an honor it felt, but also like a bit of a violation of their own privacy. Like it felt weird that I was there in this moment, and how clinical, like I've been as a patient when I've been told that I might die from something. And it feels like this really vulnerable moment with what is sacred, right? Where the veils really get thin between the worlds. When you're almost walking through the door, you're thinking about having to walk through the door, when you're thinking about how this all ends. And it's fascinating because it seems almost like grief and loss are a gift in this way, because they remind us that this is how it works. They remind us that this journey is finite. And I became really obsessed with wanting to understand after that, like, why do so many people wait till they have to change? And why are we so afraid to listen to our soul or intuition? And of course, there's the evolutionary parts of this process, which is that, hey, look, you holding a different opinion, a different value, a different whatever than a group can put you at threat to belonging in that group. And so the internet and globalization and travel and all these things that have given us more access to more people have offered us the perception and experience very often of more social safety to be ourselves. And I remember years ago listening to Esther Perel talk about how in some way we have so much choice that we become a bit paralyzed. And you know, there's that famous TED talk, The Paradox of Choice, in that we were sort of born into the job we were going to have for our lives, or we were born into the way in which we were going to serve. And when you get to choose how you want to serve in whatever way possible, that could be overwhelming, that could be exciting, and that could also be paralyzing, right? Because we don't want to choose the wrong way. And we talk about this in the context of relationship, that we choose one person, we're often doing the math of what we're foregoing in terms of being able to choose one or more other people, or foregoing variety, you know, we're foregoing something. And that's true, right? The thing that you give up has to be honored in the choice that you make. But can the perception of other choices make us not value the one we make? Yes, of course, because we have to be really mindful of how we frame our mind. And I was thinking in the service of January 2026, just going through something that I think is really important for us all to not just know, but be and live. And that is that the things that you know you need to change, the things that you know are out of alignment with your values, the call, the nudge, the whisper that you hear at night that says, hey, you need to do this, you need to change this, you need to get sober, you need to quit this, you need to start this. You can't run from those. So, like, there are plenty of marketing tactics to monetize you not choosing that thing. So the pain that you experience from not actually doing the thing or listening to yourself is very easily monetizable. And what I want to say to you and emphasize is that it may seem optional that you get to do the thing you want to do, that you don't have to actually listen. It isn't actually optional. It comes with a very large cost. Now, look, I can honor when we make soul contracts to delay something because we know delaying is better, or we're just too afraid to confront, or we haven't built all the skills yet to do the thing. And so we say, well, I'm going to do this for the next 6 months. I'm going to stay with this person for the kids, and I'm going to do it till they're 18, which of course has a lot of negative impacts, but that's a whole other conversation. Because everyone gets to make their own subjective choice, and it's not up to me to judge that choice, but it is up to us to be honest with ourselves about the things that we're doing and the choices we need to make to create better versions of ourselves. And of course, the patterns that the people who follow below us, our children, inherit from us. Now, look, I can honor when we make a contract with the soul. We say, hey, you know what? I'm going to stay in this till then. I'm going to keep this job till then. And we make a negotiation with ourselves. We just have to make sure that we honor the contract that we sign, right? Like, that's the most important thing. I'm not here to judge if you make a choice to stay together for the kids or stay in a job you hate. Because look, I stayed in a job that I did not like in order to invest in the future that I desired. I stayed in patterns of behavior that were not serving me because I was afraid, right? Like, these were all necessary aspects where I needed to learn enough to change. I needed to learn enough to have to make some sort of transformation where I got to the end because I was so terrified of the choice I had to make, I actually had to run out of runway. And so we all do this, and I'm just so fascinated by the human psyche and our soul and just our journey that we delay this, right? And I was diving deep into Carl Jung's work, and he has so many good quotes. I want to read one and talk about it because I think it's such a powerful one, and we all are probably familiar with it, but it's, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. And that is because if you don't go deep into what actually drives you, your unconscious, subconscious beliefs, the things that you've been taught about life and love and the stuff that you've hidden away in a little box within you, we think that those things are not steering our life, but they are. Because if you had something happen to you when you were a kid, or you were taught something about self-expression, and you do not actually go towards that and learn how to heal it and feel it, then it will actually prevent you from having conversations. It will prevent you from doing things. So it still lives within you. So the unconscious will shape what is going on in your life, and you'll just call it fate, because we call it fate, we call it bad luck, we call it all of these things. But every time you make a choice to do one thing, you trade the choice of another. Until we're willing to actually go deep within the thing that we're afraid of, the thing that we know we need to confront, it will live within the choices we make in our lives. It will be the patterns that exist in our lives. And so I want to reaffirm that you can try to run from it, but it will come for you. What's strange is when you finally accept the mission, you accept the truth, you say, okay, I got to go deep into that thing. Then all of a sudden the books appear, the teacher appears, the quote appears, the thing that makes you go, oh crap, like that's so true. This has been driving my life. This is why I drink too much. Oh, wait, what about even confronting the truth that you drink too much? You know, what about confronting that you have a dysfunctional relationship with your phone, right? These are all such important things to navigate. And you don't get to just blame fate. I'm not saying that people don't experience bad luck. Of course. I'm not saying that people don't experience painful things. Of course they do. But there are so many things in our lives and so many circumstances that we end up in that are precisely where you end up when you make choices from a place of a wound, right? Like, we don't just by accident end up in relationships with unavailable people over and over again. We're choosing that. We are a match for them on some level. And so we have to take the level of responsibility of the choice so we can change it. There's another quote. I'm going to read a few of his because they're zingers. Your visions will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakes. I love that, right? Like, who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakes. How I interpret this is that you can go try to get more instruction manuals, right? You can go get more books. You can get more things. And I'm not saying there isn't value to all those because I've had books that have changed my life. I had courses that have changed my life. Therapists, teachers changed my life. And yet, I will say that some of the most profound shifts have been when I've gotten quiet enough to hear myself. Where I have been in deep grief. And I think grief is one of, and this is why death, I think, is so transformational, is because the veil between the worlds, right? When you're at the door to the worlds, to the space between, you start to really, it's hard to tell the difference between them both, between the underworld or the darkness, which we might call it. And we would ascribe to that a negativity, but it's not negative. It just is. Just like the shadow is not just this place that can destroy you. It is also the same place that can liberate you, right? The thing that you think will consume you is also the key to exit the prison. So when we actually go within ourselves and we get quiet and we create intentional time with nature, and we sit by a tree and we close our eyes and we really take the time to be in relationship, not just with ourselves, but in conversation with the collective, with God, with the universe, whatever you want to call it. Now, I think when we actually do that, we're saying, hey, not only do I matter, but this matters, this curiosity I have, this friction I have. And, you know, I can say this time and time again, that the answer to the thing you desire is usually the thing you don't want to do, right? It's like the advice you get when you close your eyes and you go, what do I need to do? And it's like, you need to have that hard conversation. You need to set that boundary. You need to leave that job. You need to start a Substack. It's like, they're terrifying to do, but that's what heals the wound that has been steering your silence this whole time. Right? Because the reason we don't just say to someone, I miss you or this isn't working, is because of all the narratives we have about relationships working. Just like if we want to pursue our dream, the reason that we don't pursue it is, of course, fears about money, just like leaving relationships could be fears about money. But it's really about what will people think of me? Who am I to? Right? They're all the same narratives within everybody's head. The imposter syndrome, who's going to listen to me? How am I going to make money? All these viable, important things to percolate and think about, but do not let them rule your life, right? Like, build the thing while you're in the other thing, right? But it's the building. It's the act of moving towards something, the conversation. How do I have hard conversations? How do I, you start to look that up. You start to learn it. You start to ask people who left relationships, how did you do it? What did you learn, right? And you start to talk to people who are entrepreneurs, who start businesses. What did you learn? This is why there's so much value to understanding from somebody and learning from somebody who's already walked a path you want to walk. And yet, I remember when I read the book, Too Good to Leave, Too Bad to Stay, even though I knew the answer I got from the book, I didn't act on the answer yet. Just like even though I knew strategically that I needed to end Create the Love, I didn't till a couple weeks ago. And now it seems like such a non-issue, but it was so important to do on such a deep level. And that's why I'm saying the delay can be important for you to mobilize to get more information. But once the knowing you have is causing you suffering, you need to act upon it to release the knowing. Because now the knowing is saying, we already know what to do, let's go. Okay, next quote from Mr. Carl Jung. Whatever is rejected from the self appears in the world as an event. So this is interesting. You might have heard this story before, but in college, I was dating this woman and she got a scholarship to go play sports in the States. I grew up in Canada. I loved her, like loved her so deeply, thought we were going to, you know, build a relationship together, be married, all that kind of stuff. I basically thought that about every girlfriend. Not to minimize it, but, you know, I dated for the purpose of creating a life with someone and then creating life with them in children. And when she went away to school, for me, it wasn't a question of do we stay together? It was how do we stay together? And I was willing to do a lot of things for that. And we had a conversation before she went away. I mean, we had many, but one of them was that we would be able to see other people. We would just tell each other about it. You already know that doesn't sound like a good plan. Right. And so she came back for Canadian Thanksgiving, and she came back with one of her best friends was also down there. And then she came back for dinner, for Thanksgiving dinner in Canada. It's the same as the US Thanksgiving, just in October. And so she comes back and I'm sitting at a table at her mom's house, and it's me, her mom, her dad, her stepdad, and this guy that she brought back from Idaho that was a friend of her and her friends, and he wanted to come up for Canadian Thanksgiving. And while I'm sitting at the dinner eating my effing turkey, I'm like, I think there's something going on between them. You know, I don't have a lot of recollection of that dinner. I do have a recollection of that image and where the awareness happened. And then my only real memory of that dinner after is me standing at the bottom of her stairs saying to her, "Is this how you tell me?" And she's like, "I guess." First off, got to talk about some balls, right? Like having us both at a dinner. I mean, damn. And you know, when I tell this story, people are like, "Man, what a B-I-T-C, you know, and I can't believe she did that," and all that kind of stuff. And sure, you know, when I was young, that felt like a deep, deep betrayal and a very painful experience, of course. But I also didn't process the experience with anybody. I was embarrassed about it. And I really went deep into my own self in the processing of that. But what's really interesting is it in hindsight, it made me realize that betrayals on the outside are almost always preceded by betrayals on the inside. And what I mean by that is if you go back through a timeline of my relationship with her, there was a point before she left where we were saying this, we're going to see other people, we'll just tell each other if we do, where that actually didn't align for me. I didn't want to see other people. And so I betrayed myself to keep the relationship. And so this quote, "Whatever is rejected from the self appears in the world as an event. I rejected and betrayed myself and what I truly desired, and then what I experienced in the world as an event was a betrayal." And so, of course, what happened was not okay. But the only reason I ended up at that dinner table is because I didn't honor myself. And so I want you to explore, what are you rejecting within yourself that has shown up in the events in your life? What are you rejecting within that you know is coming for you if you do not actually take ownership and charge and choice over it? Right? And what is currently in your life that is an event that you can trace back to something that you rejected from within yourself? I know it's a heavy point of inquiry, but there is nothing more liberating than the acknowledgement and awareness that you threw yourself out to dry, that you threw yourself under the bus, that you're willing to compromise yourself for other people. All right, next quote. "That which you most need will be found where you least want to look." Right, I touched on this before, that the deep in the shadow doesn't just exist the things you're terrified of confronting, but that's also where your liberation is. So think about this. Every trigger is an opportunity for mastery. And what I mean by that is a trigger is a hypersensitive state, right? It's like a radar that says when the trigger happens, it goes, these situations, circumstances, words are familiar. There's an energetic experience here. I'm being hypervigilant. I've experienced something similar. Let's get reactive so that we don't recreate the same circumstances. And yet, in the way that our trigger responds, we tend to recreate the very exact same circumstances that created the trigger. Okay. And that's because what happened is that the way we learned to respond to that event was probably from people who modeled or created the experience. So if we watched parents go through something that was painful, and the way that they responded was not to confront it, not to repair, then we wouldn't learn repair. So we basically model how to respond. Like, we inherit a lot of our triggers from our parents, right? And so we don't have the nervous system capacity to choose something different. We don't have the memory or imprint or strategies or tools or instructions within our own being how to move through conflict and turn it into deeper intimacy. Now, remember, intimacy isn't just intimacy with another person. It's intimacy. So it is that the trigger and the way that you respond to it that is from a healthy place could be putting up a boundary, which would create space from something that is painful that would allow you to be more deeply connected to yourself. So every trigger is an opportunity for mastery, because every time you get triggered, you can go and explore what happened that created the trigger and what skill set would you need to learn from that experience that created it in order to walk through that experience in life. And you're young, right? So we have to acknowledge that if you're really young, it wouldn't have been safe for you to use that skill set, but you as an adult have to find access to it. So if you're young and let's say you were hit, of course the appropriate response to that would be to defend yourself, find someone else to help you. Let's say that was not available to you. So we have to have compassion that we couldn't act on the skill. We were doing the best we could at the time based on what we knew and the resources we had. But now we're going to look at and study, what would standing up for myself look like? What would somatic work look like to get into the nervous system, to release that experience, to release the trigger based on that experience? What would be the words I would need to learn how to express to stand for myself? So you develop mastery in that space. So every trigger is an opportunity for you to become an exceptional version of yourself. Inside the trigger is a deep sensitivity to an experience and an event. And if you can learn from that wound, from that sensitivity, it will teach you exactly what you need to know so that you can move forward in life without such a deep sensitivity. Now, what's interesting is most people will say, I thought I healed and I still get triggered. Healing a trigger isn't about getting rid of them. It's about changing how you respond when you're triggered, because the hypersensitivity is trying to protect you. And it's about inserting more choice with a skill set, right, that allows you to do something differently. I share this whole conversation about Carl Jung and the wisdom that he imparted upon us because it's so important in 2026, but at any moment in our lives, that we are willing to see that there is wisdom that is deeply embedded in our being that is trying to be revealed to us. And we have all these adaptive strategies and cultural messages and human things that make it so we don't trust ourselves, that we don't act upon the things that we know we need to do. And my message to you in this episode is essentially that you can't pretend you don't know and you can't wait. You can make contracts for delay, but eventually you have to honor those contracts. And you have to start to really feel into, right? Because at the very beginning of the episode, I talked about how mortality, when confronted, is liberating, right? When we actually can see that death is coming, then now we can become alive. Instead of just pretending it's not true, that doesn't free us. That's actually the thing that keeps us in prison. And so if there's one thing you can get from this episode, it's that the time is now. You do not have the luxury of waiting. That's bullshit. Because at any moment, your life can be taken, right? At any moment, it can all be done with. And then what is the point of pretending that you didn't know? What is the point of sitting on your hands and not just going for it, because you actually have nothing to lose, right? You have nothing to lose by becoming everything that you are. And so I've really thought that 2026 is the time where we stop obsessing with personal growth and we actually become obsessed with being the very possible edge of our own potential, right? Because we study so much, how do I become better? Become better, right? Like I can only imagine how much knowledge you have right now that you just haven't implemented. And that's always going to be true because you're always going to be learning more. That is a sign of healthy development, that there are many iterations of you trying to come alive. So with all that said, I'm so excited for 2026. I'm excited to walk alongside you. I'm excited for all the things. If you like this podcast, please share it. And please subscribe to the podcast. That's one way you could support the podcast without having to do anything else. Listening, subscribing, and I have so much gratitude that you trade time to watch this. And with all that said, I'll see you on the next pod. Have a beautiful day.